Welcome to First Reading, the Old Testament Lectionary Podcast. I'm Tim McNinch, and I'm coming to you along with my colleagues here from the Convention Center in San Diego, California, where we are at the Society for Biblical Literature, Society of Biblical Literature. I always get that mixed up. At the SBL annual conference here, where in a sort of rare occurrence, all four of us are in the same physical place at the same time.
First time, bro.
Some of us meeting for the first time.
Right? Yes.
So what we decided to do was to come together while we were here in the same place to record our episodes for Advent. So we're glad to get to do this and the following three episodes as part of this time that we get to hang out together here.
Right. Did you want us to do our names?
Yeah. Who are you guys?
Oh, yeah.
My name is Paul Essa. I am a PhD student in Hebrew Bible at Yale University.
I'm Rachel Wren. I teach biblical studies at Trinity Lutheran Seminary at Capital University. And I'm Rosie Candlepole. I also teach biblical studies at Wake Forest University.
And once again, I'm Tim McNinch, and I teach at Christian Theological Seminary.
Yeah, you do.
So kind of a short episode here for today, but just to give you all something to chew on for Advent 1.
Yeah.
Actually, I just want to say, first of all, I'm kind of glad it's not all Isaiah texts.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, and we one year we had all Isaiah in Advent, and then a ton of Isaiah in Epiphany as well. And it's just like, man.
Yeah. But at any rate, so for Advent 1, we have a passage from Jeremiah as the first reading. Jeremiah 33, verses 14 to 16, for the lectionary date of December 1st. And this, because it's just a couple verses, why don't I read it just so we have it? So this is from the NRSV UE, the updated edition. The days are surely coming, says the Lord, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. In those days and at that time, I'll cause a righteous branch to spring up for David, and he shall execute justice and righteousness in the land. In those days, Judah will be saved and Jerusalem will live in safety. And this is the name by which it will be called. The Lord is our righteousness. So here we have just a few verses, which, you know, what's what the lectionary does from time to time, little snippet.
No.
The first thing that kind of stood out to me is, oh, yeah, here's that prediction of Jesus, right? Which after I had kind of gone through my notes and typed up some things for myself, I sort of figured out that I had taken a long time to get at a pretty simple little nugget of takeaway, which is don't just treat this as a prediction of Jesus.
Oh, my God. It's going to repeat. I'm sure.
Yeah, we all were like,
it's going to repeat.
It's not the Lord, our righteous Savior, comma, JC.
Right. You didn't get that manuscript tradition.
Yeah.
When we do that, when we use it as just a sort of like predictive text, then we're losing a connection with the context of the passage itself.
Yeah.
And even, you know, within, if we think of this as part of the Old Testament prophetic tradition, even there we tend to blur the prophets all together.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why were we excited that this wasn't Isaiah again?
Yeah. Right?
What's the difference of having a Jeremiah text versus an Isaiah text? So having some of that in mind may give us some insight into what a preacher could do with this particular little snippet that might be more, you know, interesting, enlightening, inspiring than just the sort of like the Old Testament predicts the coming of Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Just by way of review, Jeremiah, the historical prophet, was a 6th century Judahite prophet. He was active in his public role as a prophet in the closing years of the Judahite monarchy as Babylon was kind of looming on the world stage.
Yeah.
And, you know, as scholars have processed through the stuff that's in Jeremiah, often it has a very kind of Deuteronomistic sounding message, a kind of warning of impending disaster because of the unfaithfulness of Judah's kings. And in the context of Jeremiah, that's specifically Jehoiakim, who was the great King Josiah's son, Jeconiah, who was Josiah's grandson, and then Zedekiah, who was another of Josiah's sons, Jeconiah's uncle. It's a weird sort of family dynamic there.
But
Zedekiah was the last king of Judah before the Babylonian destruction of the city. Like many of the prophetic books, especially the long ones, the book of Jeremiah is a collection of, of many layers of literature, some which probably goes back to Jeremiah himself, and other layers that were composed and collected by later authors put out there in Jeremiah's name. And that's important for this text in particular, because this Jeremiah 33, 14 to 16 is actually a kind of remix of an earlier passage in Jeremiah, Jeremiah 23, 1 to 8. And that earlier version, sorry, this is a little bit of a sidetrack, but it's kind of interesting. The earlier version feels very embedded in that historical context of the Judahite monarchy's last days, right? Laying the blame for the scattering of God's people at the feet of the Davidic dynasty, named as the shepherds of, of God's people. These shepherds, these kings, had failed in their leadership. And so Jeremiah is prophesying back there in chapter 23 that God's going to step in and take over leadership of the people. Verse 3 in chapter 23 says, in speaking for God, I myself will gather the remnant of my flock from all the lands to which I've banished them, and I will bring them back to their pasture, while they will be fertile and increase. And then Jeremiah goes on to say there that God's going to appoint new shepherds over the people. And that's where this is the part that gets recycled. In those lines, there's some interesting wordplay, by the way. Here's my little Hebrew tidbit for the day, right? Jeremiah is using wordplay to contrast the new leadership that God's bringing with the failed kings. So when God says in verse 5 in Jeremiah 23, I will raise up for David a branch, the verb raise up, v'hakimoti, is a variation of the name Jehoiakim, Jehoiakim. Adonai will raise up. And then in the next verse, God says that the name of this new leader will be Adonai is our righteousness, or Adonai is our vindication, as the JPS does it, which is a play on the name Zedekiah, Tzidkiyahu, which also means my vindication is Adonai. So in other words, under this new regime, under God's own sponsorship, new leadership will live up to the old king's names in a way that the kings themselves didn't. So that's just kind of an interesting sort of backdrop for the way that this, you know, several chapters later, it gets recycled again.
I'm so glad you started us, though, with the question of what difference does it make to have this be Jeremiah and not Isaiah? Because I do, I mean, even I do that, like the prophets kind of shwish them all together in my mind. And I have to take a step back and think, no, you know, Jeremiah was the prophet when the Israelite version of Nero fiddling while the world burned. Like, Jeremiah was the one watching that happen, you know, so it really deepens it for me to think about that historical context.
Jeremiah is such a sharp critic of the particular regime. I mean, he gets him in trouble, too. He's one of the prophets. We get some of, like, biographical stuff about the consequences of his speaking truth to power, which were pretty dire. But interestingly, now that we get to the actual lectionary text where it's recycled again, it's brought forward again in probably an exilic or early post-exilic context, but with a few changes, where the old prophecy emphasized the days of the king in his days, Jeremiah 33 kind of broadens that, generalizes it to in those days or at that time, which is kind of formulaic language in the prophets for kind of ambiguous, almost eschatological era of divine rescue. And instead of naming the king, his name will be Adonai is our righteousness. In chapter 33, it's the city Jerusalem, which will be called, her name shall be Adonai is our vindication or our righteousness. And the emphasis shifted from a particular coming king to this broader era where God's justice kind of defines the identity of the city and thereby the people as a whole. I think that's interesting because, to me, it shows even within Jeremiah the way that texts can be rethought, reimagined for a different context, which I think fits well for using this as an Advent text. So even though I was harping on not using this as, like, predictive of Jesus, I think it is totally legitimate and within even the model of the text itself to think about Jesus through the lens of this text.
That's nice.
And so that I think works pretty well. How does that strike you all?
I guess for me, like, it feels a lot also like the way the tone of the way the prophecy sounds, it's ambiguous enough. And so that makes me understand why people read Jesus into the thing, right? Because it's kind of like makes the way for it to
open the door.
Yeah, it opens the door for it.
I think, of course, like, so I always look at the New Testament passage when we're thinking about the preaching task. But what's interesting is this is Luke chapter 21 is our gospel passage. It's one of the little apocalypses of Jesus. And so, you know, the kind of connection that you're already bringing up, the kind of apocalyptic scenario of see the days of the Lord, seems connected. But also, it's a little strange for Advent 1 to be pointing us toward this apocalyptic scenario, or maybe it's just right for this moment as I kind of think about the apocalyptic as both like something that tries to think about historical crises, but is also offering some sort of hope in the reframing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even in Jesus's preaching here, Jesus is using apocalyptic imagery.
Yeah.
There will be signs in the sun, the moon, the stars, and on the earth, distress among nations. That's how this kind of reading will begin for the gospel. I'm like, wow, that is really different from Isaiah. You know, like, they're kind of like, you know, heralding a prophet. Instead, what we're hearing is a very kind of a naming of the kind of crises that we might be facing environmentally, and the kind of the fears that we might be, you know, wrestling with in this moment. And so maybe there's something there at the beginning of Advent that this is how we're beginning.
Yeah, it really starts with a moment of realism and honesty. It reminds me a little bit, you know, Wicked, the movie is coming out. And if you're familiar with that, the very first song is Good News repeated over and over again, but in a minor key. So there's that like ambiguity of what is good news and what is, you know, that it feels a little bit like this moment. But whereas that's sort of a cynical play on good news, it feels like this is more an honest play on good news doesn't mean everything gets smoothed over. But it's good news in spite of everything being topsy-turvy.
And that fits so well with Jeremiah because our text is from Jeremiah 33. And chapters 30 through 33 in Jeremiah are often called the little book of consolations.
Yes.
But it's in the context of the rest of Jeremiah, which is all doom and gloom.
Yes.
That's right. Because he's living through this disastrous era.
Yeah.
But there's this like little glimmer of hope, and optimism isn't quite the right word, but hope works there.
Hope works,
But even within that, even in the very text that we were looking at within the Book of Consolations, is a recycling of a text from just a highly critical. I think if we are going to think about this as an Advent text, like 33 does with 23, we can use this to think about our own context, and even our context as Christian readers, without losing touch with the old context.
Yep.
So I was thinking, you know, there's not a straight line, of course, between the text and our world. The U.S. is an ancient Judah, but we are a very populous nation here in the U.S. with political leaders who have great responsibility to uphold justice and promote some sort of like good, healthy society. So I was thinking maybe a modern Jeremiah speaking into our context might say something like, you know, God's been biding their time for long enough, and the day is coming when God's going to raise up new leaders who will allow justice to trump injustice.
Yeah.
Kind of using the sort of play on the names of the leaders.
I see what you did there.
To say something about God's investment.
That's right.
In the outcome of people's lives here. So I don't know. That's kind of where I had taken it. And I think that could be an interesting way to spin a Advent 1 sermon, maybe.
Got one more angle, if I could. So this, what I was stuck on is this branch of righteousness, or a branch to spring up for David. And then in the gospel in chapter 21, there's also Jesus says, look at the fig tree and all the trees. As soon as they sprout leaves, you can see for yourselves and know that summer's already near. Right. So, I mean, to me, that there might be something there in the idea of what sprouting And what kind of life is there? How do we read these signs of the, you know, the fig tree? So, you know, maybe there's a potential preaching angle as you look for some kind of resonances.
Good stuff. Well, that's probably enough for now. And we'll move on to our next episode, which you all will get to experience in about a week. So thanks, everyone, for watching or listening this week to First Reading. You can find everything that we've done, all 300 previous episodes, back on our website, firstreadingpodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube. Wherever you like to get it, go ahead and hit subscribe so that you can get the new stuff as soon as it comes out. But, you know, hang in there, everyone. We're thinking of you all. We're praying for you all during this Advent season. We know it's a busy time for preachers especially, and we're holding you up. So hopefully we'll have something helpful for you in the coming weeks as well. Until then, I'm Tim McNinch.
I'm Paul Essa.
I'm Rachel Wren.
And I'm Rosie Campbell.
Happy Advent and happy preaching.